It's our first visit with the police chief of 2018. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
I'm doing well also. Happy New Year to you. I know you regularly meet with the administrative staff of the police department, and you talk about crime trends and things that are going like that, or just trends that are happening that impact you. Have you done kind of a review of 2017?
Not yet.
When you do that, what will you do?
Well, you just look over the history we try not to look at 1 year and pick 1 year at, because 1 year really isn't a trend. We actually look monthly at crime data for the past 5 years. So we look at all aspects of crime, whether it be property crime or crimes against persons or whatever, and we look at how we're trending and how we might address that.
It's interesting because some years Columbia might have one or two homicides.
Correct.
We're a small enough community still, and I'm grateful for that. That to me, I think one or two is too much, but at the same time, that's not bad. To me,
you know, as a police chief, I think I have colleagues across the country. I think that would tell you, you know, you never want to rest on your laurels because you can have a bad year and you can have a bad couple of years, as a matter of fact, and it's interesting because one of the most terrifying things to the public is the homicides that occur, and people always pay attention to those. But it's one of the least preventable by the police, because we don't know when you're contemplating killing someone. You know, it happens, and then we go and investigate it. So it's almost totally reactive. Preventing homicides is next to impossible. But, you know, if you know somebody's after somebody and there's gang affiliations and things like that, of course, there's things you can do. But nobody can get into the mind or the soul of the individual and anticipate when they're going to do something to another person.
And I wonder how much, and we're talking generally here, we're not talking about specifics, I don't think, specific cases yet, but how much are those reactionary killings rather than well-plotted out killings?
Yeah, most of them are reactionary, and usually we find that most of them are drug related or gang related as it relates here in Columbia, and you know, those things are very, very difficult to predict.
You said, and I was going to bring this in, and it's on my shelf back in my office, and I'm sorry I didn't bring it in, but I remember an article that ran recently towards the end of 2017 where you made the comment that a lot of what happens in this community as far as violent crimes are gang or drug related. I mean, that seems to be it's been a given for quite some time that would be a true statement.
And, you know, I've put some thought into it, you know, and a lot of them seem to be not necessarily opioids or high level drugs like that. They seem to be more related to marijuana. And I'm kind of, you know, doing a little introspective research here, you know, and maybe that we actually created the market by minimizing the penalty for users of marijuana. Did we actually increase the probability of someone coming in here and looking at this as a very lucrative market? And I've done a lot of thought about that, and you know, it does make some sense that if you have a market for people that are, you know, not worried about getting in trouble about it because it's such a minor offense, would it attract someone who would want to deal in marijuana on a higher level? And I think that's something we have to think about.
Then the next step would be some who would be listening would say, well, let's go ahead and legalize it.
Yeah,
totally.
And I would,
and
I would,
what would
I
happen
agree.
Then?
Yeah. And I think I would agree. I'm one of those people that looks at it in the harm that it causes. And I'm not convinced yet it's any worse than alcohol. So as long as that's the case, you know, and I've advocated for it before, as a matter of fact. I've told local folks that wanted to legalize it, the place to start is at the federal level, and let's get it done there. And it makes it so much easier at the local level then to put things in place. And I'm watching the states very closely who have legalized it, the most recent being California, who expects to collect $1 billion in tax revenue. That in my mind could go back toward enforcing the laws we have in place unrelated to marijuana. So maybe that's a possibility.
And you'll have opportunity also to see in regards to that crimes and drug-related crimes and things of that nature. Colorado did this a few years ago. I don't know what the trends are there.
Actually, right after, I think they had an increase, or at least people that are against it said there was an increase in driving fatalities and things like that. But I think you have to put the laws in place at the same time to address the issues, just like we do with alcohol. You know, we have alcohol-related deaths every year as well. I don't know that they'd be any worse or any better. I just don't know.
It would surprise me. I'm going to go back to something you said at the start of that and get away from people who would like to debate back and forth whether marijuana should be legalized for recreational or medicinal purposes. But I think it would surprise some of us to think that the driving engine of what would be certain things that are happening here locally would be marijuana as far as the selling of that and the trafficking in that. I mean, because a lot of people seem to have gotten past that and have the attitude that you just shared on its legality and whether it should be legal or not and what safeguards could be in place if it were legal. But what you're saying is that marijuana drives a lot of what's happening here with the drug activity.
It's kind of like prohibition. If you look back at history and you look at prohibition and all the violence that occurred over illegal alcohol, that's how I look at it. And if you remove that prohibition and make it where the government can actually monitor it and can license people to sell it and oversee it and make it safe for people, or as safe as it possibly can be anyway, that you're at an advantage. You know, when you don't have those rules and there's people can sell anything they want, there's all kinds of trash out there.
I'm going to move on to different topics. The city council recently expanded what it means to drive while distracted. And there has been some debate about how will the police deal with this. And we took a call when the mayor was on 3 weeks ago from a listener. And he said, look, I'm not concerned with expanding driving while distracted because there seem to be laws already in place to deal with people who do not drive safely. And that was taken and expanded to talking about having personnel to be able to do deeper things from the police department, like investigations of crimes and things of that nature. And the mayor said that he wanted to take a look and say, look, if it's going to require more time for investigators, if we're going to have to stretch this out. His point was, I think, that we've got some issues here as far as investigating and detective work, and it may be because we're short on people power to be able to do that. How do you respond to those kinds of things?
Well, we've talked about being short on people power since I've been here, you know, and I think the mayor's correct that we have some issues that we need to address in other areas. It's not just distracted driving is pretty much the least of our worries, you know, when you talk about some of the other things that occur in our city. But it is something that I think could be addressed, but I don't really see it as enforceable. This is more of a law that I think that, you know, if you have a witness that says David Lyle was texting when he rear-ended me, I saw him in my rearview mirror, obviously it can be enforced. But absent that, someone actually seeing the person in the car being distracted by the radio or their text message or whatever it is, how are you going to enforce it?
You're not going to stop people just because somebody doesn't seem to be
correct.
Paying attention.
Well, you would.
If they were driving poorly?
Right, okay. Which we do anyway.
Yeah,
you know, if they're drifting out of the lanes or whatever, and it's obvious they're not paying attention, the first thing we think is they may be intoxicated. So, you know, they would get pulled over then, and that's another form of driving, you know, the not paying attention.
We started out talking about how we could go through a year where you'd have one or two homicides, and that might be a good year. Not a good year. Please don't hear me saying that a homicide
right,
is good.
Right.
But statistically, that would be a good year. Last year, we had the other end of that. How many of those are still out there that are unsolved or still being investigated?
No, I don't know the exact number, and I don't want to say unsolved because they're in various stages of investigation, and there are some that, you know, we may actually know who the perpetrator is, and we just haven't had enough evidence to take action on it or whatever. So I don't want to jeopardize an investigation by answering that question specifically. But they're at various stages. You know, some of them are easily solved, and some of them not so much.
And you have people who are able to spend time, or would that be an area where you would like to see more personnel to be able to handle the investigation? I think investigating a crime like that has to take a whole lot of hours.
Oh, it does, and it takes a team effort. And when we have one of these homicides, you know, virtually everybody in the unit has a role of some sort, whether that be canvassing witnesses or interviewing witnesses or whatever. Everybody in the unit has a role, and they all come together, and they work very well together.
How big is that unit?
There's 13 or 14 investigators.
The a murder like what happened at Old Hawthorne towards the end of 2017, it happened, it's big news, it's shocking news, and then it kind of disappears from the radar of the public. I guess I'm asking you as the chief of the police, it doesn't disappear from the police radar.
Oh, it can't. It can't, and it never does. And you know, it doesn't matter how long it is. There are actually cold case units, you know, in some of the major cities like Detroit and places like that that go back and revisit because there's always new information coming in. You'll read occasionally about DNA solving something that happened 10, 15 years ago. And so yeah, you have to stay on top of them. And usually that's the lead investigator that goes back and takes a look at things and goes back and contacts witnesses and things like that to stay on top of it.
I think that investigators have tremendous patience. Public doesn't have patience. What would you say to our impatience saying, why can't we know more about this? Maybe not knowing everything there needs to be, but why can't we know more? Why isn't there more being done? Or why is that? You probably hear that from people.
Yeah, you hear it and you hear, well, you know, nothing's being done. Well, that's just not true. There are things being done behind the scenes that we can't talk about that may, in fact, like I said a minute ago, jeopardize the investigation down the road. So we've got to be thinking, you know, months and maybe even a couple of years down the road when this is being prosecuted. And, you know, what we say today could really impact how that defense comes back and says, okay, this is what the chief said on the radio back in 2018. And now my client is here and we know this now and we didn't know that then. And next thing you know, I've jeopardized the case by running my mouth.
Boy, I'm so close to wanting to ask a question that I shouldn't ask and will not ask, but it has to do with the repercussions, like you just said. And if somebody, I think, I'm just going to say this myself, and you can say I have nothing to say or just be silent. I think that those who probably are the best suspects probably know they are the best suspects.
Well, of course they do.
And so
well,
now they know they did it. That means that they they probably have a pretty good idea that, you know what, I better disappear from this community or I better move on or I better toe the line extremely hard many times.
That
not
happens.
Everybody does.
That
I mean,
no, that
because
happens
there
quite frequently.
But the gangs who are shooting at each other in retribution, I don't think they think through that. But I think others think through that and say, okay, I better not give them any reason to make that decision to arrest me.
Well, we've talked about the shooting at each the gang shooting at each other. A lot of time that's intimidation, and then somebody gets killed or actually somebody gets hit. You're absolutely correct in that reaction. Now they've got to lay low because they're on the radar. So you know there's all kinds of factors that determine the criminal mind. And
what are you looking forward to for the department in 2018?
Well, we're getting ready to start construction of a new police facility on the north side of town that I think people are excited about, particularly in that part of the community. I think they're excited about the possibility and, well, the reality now. I think it's we're getting to, close to the design stage, and that's going to be an exciting 18 months to 2 years here as that comes together for us. And I'm hopeful that, you know, we find a way, whether it be through Lord knows how it's going to turn out, but you know we've got to find a way to fund, you know, additional police officers or decide how we're going to do it because the city continues to grow, and the department needs to continue to grow with it, and that's just a reality we're going to have to face.
I saw the release, and again, I had this in my folder that I didn't bring in, but it was talking about a graduating class, I think of 8 or so, just recently, towards the end of the year. That seemed to be promising to think that you had that many people.
Yeah, we graduated 8 from the academy and then hired an additional 4 that had previous experience, so ended up with 12. And they're in their first phases of training, well, other than the academy, in their first phases of the department's training right now. And they're a good group, sharp group, and really excited about getting that many on. And it's a repeat of something that happened, you know, 15, 20 years ago when we had a big group of people come through, and now those people are retiring. And we actually got to the point where we had 10 vacancies and then 2 others announced their retirement. So again, we're up to 12 again.
Up to 12 vacancies?
Right.
Because you got 12, but 12 more
Well, no, we got 12, and then that got us to 10. We were down about 20 officers.
I see. Okay. Yeah.
And then now we're back up to 12. And it happened literally overnight. I mean, these kids came on and graduated from the academy, and the following week, two officers announced their retirement.
Hmm. So why do you account for the reason that you had a graduating class of 8 and 4 more that wanted to work for the police department?
Well, a couple of things. We asked for some help from human resources in expediting the hiring process, and we're doing it a little more often now. And it is a tremendous amount of work for them. Every time we have a process, you know, they have to be involved and they have to assist us with it. And so it was a huge sacrifice on their part, but we're now taking the applications online. We've refined it a little bit and made it a little bit easier to apply, and I think it's starting to show results.
Have others in the pipeline that might fill in for those 10 to 12 that used to have vacancies?
Yes, we do. And it's a constant thing, David.
It's cyclical, too, isn't it, though? As you said, 15 years ago, you might have gone through where there were a lot of good candidates and a lot of good hires. And we've talked over the years that you've been here of how hard it was to find those who wanted to work in the police.
Yeah, I'll be here 9 years in March.
Really?
Yeah. That seems like yesterday, doesn't it?
Well, it seems like a while, but not 9 years.
Yeah, 9 years in March. And in one time, we were at full strength, and that was for 2 days. It's just something that, you know, it's something we deal with on a daily basis. It's a full-time job keeping these kids in the pipeline because as we've talked before, as you get them trained and everything, it takes us over a year to get an officer onto the street. And then I believe, this is just Ken Burton's theory, that it's another 2 years before they're really comfortable out there, even though they're by themselves. So you're looking at an 18-month to 3-year process to get a productive police officer out there, and it's a cycle that we go through regularly.
Well, I'm glad to hear about those who graduated and hear you say that you've got good candidates and good people that are joining the force. I wish you the best
with
that.
Great group of kids. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being here.
You betcha.
Ken Burton, the chief of the police department in Columbia, has been our guest. It's 9 o'clock. The morning meeting is next.